Claire, who we heard from earlier, has tried a range of different treatments.
I now take a mild antidepressant called sertraline, which is an SSRI inhibitor.
So a selective serotonin reuptake inhibitor, is that right?
That's the one. And so I take that, and I also did a course of cognitive behavioural therapy, which helped me to retrain my brain by neutralising the negative thoughts that I have with more rational ones. I exercise a lot. I go to the gym 3 times a week to keep my adrenaline levels down in a healthy way. And the biggest one for me, actually, is what I call exposure therapy, whereby I slowly put myself in situations that make me uncomfortable in order to retrain my amygdala in my brain not to go off every time I'm in that situation in future, because there is no danger. I'm always going to be a little bit nervous, but for me it was accepting that being nervous is a completely natural emotion. It's not a symptom of a bigger problem. People get nervous before interviews and people get nervous before they meet new people. That's 100% fine, and it's just about accepting that feeling but doing it anyway, because it might be fun and it's never as bad as you think it's going to be.
Scott too has come to terms with the fact that he's never going to be entirely free from anxiety, but that he can manage it.
I may never be cured, but I can come to terms with the anxiety and recognize that it is an acceptable part of who I am and comes with certain elements of my personality that may be favorable. There are many things that I have, therapies and techniques that I've used that do help. Certain medications help a lot in certain circumstances, and obviously, you know, medication works in different ways for different people, but SSRI antidepressants and benzodiazepines, which are the class of sort of minor tranquilizer, help a lot with severe anxiety. I've, mindfulness meditation, I've not probably explore that enough myself, but there's lots of evidence that that can be highly, highly effective in literally reshaping your brain, you know, strengthening the rational part of your brain and literally shrinking the amygdala, which is the seat of fear. So there's a lot of evidence that that works. And then many psychiatrists will say there are, you know, if you're in the throes of a panic attack or if you're feeling overwhelmed, do breathing exercises to help yourself calm down. And then any doctor or dietitian or psychiatrist will tell you sleep is incredibly important, regular exercise is incredibly important, and cultivating what the psychiatrists today talk about, resilience, which is a trait that, you know, makes you resistant to developing anxiety and depression. And resilience, too, is thought to be somewhat encoded into your genes, but it's also something that can be learned. The military is studying how can they make soldiers, the U.S. military, make their soldiers more resilient so that they're resistant to breaking down with PTSD after combat. So cultivating a resilient, optimistic outlook is probably one of the more effective things you can do to mitigate anxiety.
Now, Nick, trying to accept your anxiety as part of you, you know, sounds like very good advice, but is it easier said than done when it feels so unpleasant?
Yeah, I think it is easier said than done. I think there are also things that people do with the best of intentions that actually serve to keep the anxiety going. And I think one of the things that kind of the effective treatments do is to try and identify what those kind of maintaining sort of factors are, and then to try and help change those.
What sort of things might someone do that maintain it?
Well, the kind of things really similar to kind of like Scott and Claire have mentioned is that people do things to try and prevent the worst from happening. So if your heart's racing very, very fast and you think you're going to have kind of a heart attack or you're going to pass out, it makes sense to sit down or to try and take the weight off your feet, do some breathing exercises to kind of to calm your breathing down, because you have this belief that otherwise you're going to die. The problem is, of course, is that whilst a panic attack is very frightening and feels awful, it's not in fact dangerous. Yeah, and one of the things that these precautions, these things to save yourself, do is you never learn that if you didn't do these kind of precautions, that actually you'd still be okay. So one of the things that kind of the most effective treatments do, and these are in anxiety typically cognitive behaviour therapy, is to help people learn that some of these things they do to save themselves are probably unnecessary.
So is that where Claire was talking about exposure therapy and gradually getting used to the things that she fears?
Yeah, partly. And actually, certainly for people with social anxiety disorder, it's kind of moved really kind of beyond pure exposure therapy now. And it's really looking at not just, you know, exposing yourself and kind of grinning and holding on to kind of, you know, the nearest chair until the anxiety passes. But it's really looking at what your predictions are. What do you think's going to happen, and how can you kind of really kind of test that out? And also in kind of social anxiety, one of the things that happens is that people often try to kind of hide their anxiety, something that I think Scott mentioned. And one of the things that trying to hide your anxiety or trying to kind of manage your image does is it actually makes you more self-focused, more self-conscious. And if you're kind of more self-conscious and self-focused, you're not really paying attention to what's going on out there. You're not paying attention to how people are really reacting to you. So it may feel as though some of your fears are coming true, but the reality may not be that may not be the case. One of the things that we would do as part of treatment, actually, for people with social anxiety disorder is actually to video record them as part of treatment. And
that sounds horrible.
It's certainly anxiety provoking. Right. But of course, yeah. One of the things about it being anxiety provoking is that then their fears are activated, their fears of whether they're looking shaky or whether they fear that they're going red or fear that they're saying something stupid. And how it feels to them at that moment, they can then compare with how it actually looks on the video. And one of the things that certainly we kind of find in treatment is that, you know, almost always people are surprised by how they look and how they sound on video compared to how it felt to them.
So even though they might be cringing at the beginning, it's still not actually as bad as what they were imagining.
Absolutely. And one of the things we guide people to do is to look at it as if they were watching TV, as if they were watching somebody else, rather than busy criticising themselves when they're watching it. But just to kind of see it as if as somebody else would. And then usually it's the case that what they're seeing, what they're hearing is very different to how it felt at the time.
And sometimes you're using imagery in your work as well. What's that and how would that work?
Yeah, and this is certainly something that's kind of been a development over the last kind of 10 or 15 years in anxiety disorders, that some of the worst fears that people have aren't just kind of like a verbal thought like I'm going to die or people can see I'm looking red, but they have an image of either how they're coming across. They have an image of themselves looking red in the face. They have an image of themselves kind of looking anxious. Or they may have an image of themselves actually kind of collapsed in the street from a panic attack. Certainly a person that I treated with panic disorder some time ago, he actually had an image of a blood clot moving around his body. And the fear of this then kind of reaching his heart. So when his heart was racing, he feared that this blood clot that he had in this image was going to stop his heart.
And so after people have had some sort of treatment, like possibly medication, as Claire and Scott were talking about, or cognitive behavioural therapy like this, what sort of outcomes do you see? How easy is it to actually rid people of their anxiety?
I don't think we rid people of anxiety. I don't think we ever aim to rid people of anxiety. And if people come in with the goal of saying, I never want to be anxious again, yeah, we need to have a kind of a discussion around actually the normality of fear and worry and anxiety and what's kind of realistic in those terms.